Parshas Tetzaveh, of course, the most noticeable aspect of Parshas Tetzaveh is not what's printed in the Torah, but rather that which is missing, namely the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu's name doesn't appear in the entire Parsha, something we haven't seen since the beginning of the book of Shmos and won't see again for the rest of Chamisha Chumshei Torah, the rest of the four books of the Torah. And one needs to ask the question, obviously, as to why, which is a long discussion among different commentaries. I just want to note in passing that Parshas Tetzaveh, if it wanted to make Moshe Rabbeinu scarce, does a terrible job of doing so. After all, right away in the first pasuk, we're told, V'atah Tetzaveh, that you have a responsibility to command Bnei Yisrael. And Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky once noted that the word V'atah seems extra. The Torah could simply have stated the phrase, Tetzaveh, Bnei Yisrael, and we would have known that it was Moshe Rabbeinu who was told that he was going to have to be mitzvah. Why specifically the addition of the word vi'atah at the very, very outset of the parsha? And Rav Yaakov Zatzal used to explain that had we highlighted the idea of who, the third person case, or we wouldn't have mentioned, we would have just used the command, tetzaveh, then it would have relayed a certain responsibility. But by using the word atah as a command, but as a pronoun, we place a direct connection between the one who is commanded and the project. In essence, Hashem was telling Moshe that while Bnei Yisrael were donating of themselves to the Mishkan, their job was to provide the chomer for the Mishkan and for its kelim. They were to provide the materials therein. Atah tetzaveh. I don't want to simply find you making a donation in the box, says God to Moshe. I want you to fashion that chomer by adding your tzura, by giving a form to the materials that are provided, and you will be able to endow the building with a certain environment based on your connections with me. Atah, you are an important part of the donation process. Indeed, at the end of that very pasuk, Moshe is told to tell Bnei Yisrael to take oil, lahalos ner tamid, in order to have a candle that's there all the time, a flame that's always burning. And Rashi notes that tamid means kol laila v'laila, that the flame is supposed to be lit each and every night. And thus, according to Rashi, the word tamid denotes a regular sense each and every night, as opposed to the concept of being continuous, that it's supposed to be there night, day, night, day, night, day, without interruption. Rav Shlomo Wolbe, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the late great Mashgiach, notes, based on this idea, that the concept of being a masmid, somebody who is tamid, is not one who learns without sleeping and eating, but rather the masmid is the one who learns with kvius, with a sense of regularity, and therefore becomes established in his Torah study in the process. Well, too often we think that asmad is a process that's all or nothing. That's not correct. Tamidios means a sense of responsibility to be there with regularity. And Yiddishkeit runs on the basis of regularity. Is a klal gadol ba-Torah. Then we start talking about the different aspects of the Big Day Kahuna, most of which I don't want to talk about this week, but instead, or at least not in this venue, but one really certainly jumps up. We're told that the Kohen Gadol has a responsibility to establish a tzitz. He has a responsibility to put on a head plate or on his forehead. And the Torah tells us, V'ayal Meitzach Aaron, that Aaron has to keep it on his forehead. B'nasa alav esavona kadashim. He's going to atone with it for the avon, for the sin of kadashim. You know, the Beis HaLevi once commented that daga, the worry about Jewish continuity, affects both layperson in the Jewish community and rabbis as well. But the difference is, says the Beis HaLevi, while the layman worries, he worries as a shomer chinam does, as a shomer who doesn't get paid for his responsibility. The rabbi, on the other hand, worries as a shomer sachar, as one who has a responsibility. His responsibility, and therefore his anxieties, are just quite frankly greater. V'ayah meitzach Aaron, the problems of Bnei Yisrael are always on the heads of the leadership, especially those who get paid for the job. Anyway, when Aaron HaKohen gets established as the Kohen Gadol, a major ceremony is identified in the parsha. And of course, Moshe is told to sprinkle Aaron, al bo'en yado ha'yamanis, v'al tenuch ozen yado ha'yamanis, v'al bo'en raglo ha'yamanis, on his right earlobe, and his right thumb, and his right big toe. And the question is raised by the late great Lutzker Rav, Rav Zalman Saratsky, in the Yaznaim LaTorah, why is it that Aaron gets sprinkled in these three locations on his body? And the Lutzker Rav answers that when a Kohen Gadol wears the big day kahuna, when the Kohen Gadol wears the clothing of the Kohen Gadol, they have the ability to purify him from head to toe. It's only the extremities, therefore, the ears, the limbs, that actually don't have big day kahuna attached to him, that do not have or do not provide what we call a kedusha saguf, a sanctification of the body. So by sprinkling these areas, what we're trying to do, says the Lutzker Rav, is to purify Aaron's lineage forevermore. Anyway, in the context thereafter, the Torah tells us if there's anything left over from the karbanos process, we should treat it as nosar. Don't eat it. Lo sayachel ki kodesh hu. We have to treat nosar as though it too continues to maintain its sanctity. The late great, and it's so shocking to keep calling him the late great, but the late great Rav of Memphis, Tennessee, the late Rivavos Ephraim, notes that when a Jew is by definition often compared to a karban, even a karban that is left over, even a karban that's considered nosar, that is to say, it's not going to be used for mitzvah use, says the Rivavos Ephraim, we see is still supposed to be treated with respect. Why, says the Torah? Because it's kodesh, it's too to be treated as though it has sanctity. From here, notes the Rivavos Ephraim, we must learn the same about Jews who are currently non-practicing. They also might be considered nosar, also not using mitzvah observance, but they also deserve respect for being Jewish. We need to reach out, says the Rivavos Ephraim, because a Yisrael, afal pi sheino ose mitzvos, a Yisrael who may not actually be doing a mitzvah at the present time, Adayin Yisrael, who he still considered a Yisrael. Towards the end of the parsha, we read about the making of the Mizbach HaZahav, the special Mizbeach that is created for the offering of Ketores. And of course, the question has to be raised, if we've already described all the making of all the Kelim and the Chatzer of the Mishkan, and all the different Urios, all the different tapestries, and the fact that they were all established, why is it only afterwards that the Torah tells us about the responsibility to make a Mizbach HaKetores? The late great Slana Merebi, this Nesiva Shalom, explains that one needs to understand that the two Mizbachos in the Mishkan, the two different altars that exist in the Mishkan, represent two different parts of a human being. On the one hand, the copper one, where the offerings were offered, it represents the guf, the body. After all, at the center of the hollow, inside the copper mizbeach, was dust, was earth, ki afarata, which is a reference to the guf. But at the same time, the other mizbeach represents the neshama, the soul of the Jew. The Nesivo Shalom notes that one cannot have a place for the purity of the soul for taras ha-nefesh, until one fashions a place for godliness in this world. To merely purify a soul that has no place to maintain its purity is useless. And so therefore, first we had to create the place. And this is what the Torah tries to help us understand, by telling us that there was a Mishkan, and that it was established. And then there was a place for hashras ha-shechina, a place for God's divine rulership and understanding to rest among the Jewish people. Only then, and ultimately then, there can be a place for taras ha-nefesh, a place for the purity of the soul. You know, there's one phrase that comes up again quite a bit throughout the parsha. Kasher tzivo Hashem. They all did that just as Hashem commanded. In fact, the phrase appears 18 times in the parsha. Question needs to be raised as to why so many reminders that Moshe and Bnei Yisrael didn't deviate has to be mentioned in this particular parsha. 18 times to tell us that they did? say it once at the end of the process. For Baruch Mordechai Ezrachi Shalita, the famous Rosh Yeshiva of Ateres Torah in Ateres Yisrael in Bayit Vegan, explains that when a person has a job to do, he usually does the job more or less. He has the job, he knows he has to do the job, and more or less gets the job done. When he's a partner in the process, then the person becomes more likely to stick in his own 2 cents, which of course skews the job's performance. So the fact of the matter is that whether it were to be as a worker who more or less wants to get it more or less precise, or whether it's as a partner who wants to put his own imprint on the job, neither model would have been acceptable in describing Bnei Yisrael's role in establishing the Mishkan. The role of Moshe and Bnei Yisrael here would not be akin to either of these roles if it was going to be successful. And thus, Hashem reminds us each time that there was absolutely no editorializing on behalf of Moshe and Bnei Yisrael when they built the Mishkan. They followed each step meticulously and therefore achieved success. Let me just leave you with a thought on the Haftorah, whereas in a regular year this would have been Shabbos Zachor, this year being a leap year, we actually get a chance to read the Haftorah for Parshas Tetzaveh. And in that regard, we read it from Yecheskel, who's told by the Ribono Shel Olam Ben Adam, Son of Man, go tell Bnei Yisrael about the Beis HaMikdash, so that they will be ashamed of their Averos and go ahead and measure out the opportunity to rebuild another Beis HaMikdash. In the opening word, or the opening 3 or 4 psukim of the Parsha, of the Haftorah, the focus on the word Tzura, the idea that not only should Bnei Yisrael establish a place, but also a form, appears 4 times, quite a number of times for a single introductory pasuk. And the question has to be asked, why? What is Hashem trying to have the Navi relate and relay to Bnei Yisrael? Rav Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, notes that architecture, the idea of establishing buildings, is really a combination of 2 aspects. Mathematics on the one side, making sure the buildings can stand, and aesthetics on the other, making sure that the buildings that stand actually look beautiful. And while the chukim, the mathematical side of building a Beis HaMikdash or a Mishkan, demonstrate the means of service to Hashem, transmitted via the chukim of the construction of the Mishkan, and then later the Batei Mikdash, it's the tzura, or the form that exists within the Mishkan or the Beis HaMikdash, that highlights the aura that serves to inspire the people that not only can they celebrate what they've already accomplished, but, says Rav Soloveitchik, by having a certain aura, a certain tzura, they can also recognize that there's so much more for them to strive for within the form of that which is the Ratzon Hashem, as described at the Beis HaMikdash. We have a lot more we can do. Sheyibara Beis HaMikdash, b'mheira v'yameinu.